welcome everyone to the Rosie and Bill Show. Our guest this week has been pursuing her dream and honing her craft for years, and she's become much more than a rising star. In fact, she's more like a rising star strapped to a rocket ship built by hard work, a positive outlook, and a voice that's simply out of this world. Please welcome to the Rosie and Bill Show singer, songwriter, and lover of that 90s country sound, Annie Bosco. Annie, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, how you doing? Thank you so much. That was like the nicest intro. I might need to listen to that on repeat every morning when I wake up.
I love it. Bill's really great at that. He brings it all together and it's very, very sincere. Annie, we understand that you grew up on a farm in California. Where was your family's farm and what was it like to grow up on a farm? How did it shape you as an artist, perhaps differently from someone who didn't have that type of upbringing?
You know, I feel really fortunate for my upbringing. I think especially in the world today that we're in, you know, increasingly we're becoming more overpopulated. And so it's rare to grow up in an environment where you have space and land and you have access to the outdoors and animals. And my whole family is in agriculture farming. So my dad is a third generation agriculture farmer. They grow produce, pretty much every kind of vegetable you can imagine. And so my uncle was in the rodeo world. So as kids, we had quarter horses and my cousins were in the rodeo events and my dad was in farming. And so it was a really nice kind of mix of everything. And their headquarters is in Oxnard, California, Southern California. But my dad also farmed in Salinas, California, which is more like the Central Valley. So as kids, we'd go up there in the summertime. And, I just feel fortunate. I'm comfortable around horses because of it. I love the outdoors. I think it's probably why I'm a little bit of a tomboy. And I just have a passion for the outdoors and I'm a Western lifestyle enthusiast.
Fantastic. When did music kind of enter the scene for you?
My mom says that I sang before I could talk. So I'm one of five kids. And she said, you were in the crib and you were just making noises all the time. And it was like this, bah, 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 you know, singing from the crib. And like, now I know it was singing, but at the time it was like, why can't this baby shut up? Probably. When I was five, I lost my great grandmother and we would watch The Wizard of Oz together when I was a little kid on her bed. And I would sing, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. So at her funeral, when I was five, I sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow and I don't really remember it. I just remember the only thing I remember is looking out and seeing people crying. And so I think it was that moment when, I sort of realized I had a gift that God had given me that could move people. And I'd say that that was the first time I sang in front of an audience.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because that was going to be my next question. When you said that you were singing at 5 years old for your great-grandmother,
yeah.
You know, when did anyone realize how talented you were? But you just kind of answered that you realized that you had something special to share.
Well, I had to kind of, you know, it's funny because now people like, you're so confident and you're such an amazing, you know, showman and your showmanship and you're entertaining and you're so confident in meetings and things. And that's really a learned skill because as a kid, I was painfully shy. So I would sing behind planters in the house. I would sing under tables because I wouldn't look at people when I was singing. I was always singing, but I was always nervous to sing in front of people. And so I think the confidence of entertaining and singing in front of people has grown over time. But I think, you know, people recognized it and it kind of helped pull me out of it. My mom in particular, I remember I was 13 years old and I auditioned for Peter Pan, the musical for my school play. And I wanted to be Wendy. Of course, who doesn't want to be Wendy? And I get pulled inside after the audition and they say, you are cast as Peter. We want you to be Peter. And I was mortified. I mean, I got in the car and I'm like, Mom, I can't do this. I'm going to get made fun of. Peter's a boy and I want to be Wendy. And she said, you have to be Peter. She bought me the movie starring, I can't remember the name of the actress, but it was a
Sandy
female
Duncan.
Starring. Exactly. Yeah. So my mom made me watch that and said, you have to do this. And that was sort of the icebreaker for me. It was like at that moment, and I got made fun of at school and I had braces and it was a very awkward stage for sure. But it was just the greatest thing that I could have ever done. Because at that point it was like, I don't care anymore. I don't care what people think. I just love doing this and I'm going to do it.
Did the kids, okay, you said they made fun of you, but did they also kind of respect your talent? Like, were you known as the girl who could sing?
Oh, yeah. I sing at every talent show, every football game, every birthday party. I mean, anything and everything that involved, you know, I was there to say. It was like, I was like a human music box. It was like, let's just wind her up and get her to sing at the next thing. I mean, it was like all the time, everywhere. And so I think they appreciated it, but it was also like, Peter's supposed to be a boy and she's blah, blah, blah. You know, of course I heard those things floating, but
right.
I also got a lot of praise and people, you know, loved what I did. And it was like, you are so amazing. And so I think that can be a blessing and a curse, but ultimately I love performing. I loved doing music, and that's kind of really where it started.
Right. Well, you know, we've gotten this on the reverse side from a lot of male guests that we've had who say they kind of pursued being a musician because of all the attention they got from the fairer sex. So I'm wondering, on the reverse side, did you get a lot more attention from the guys because they admire the fact that you were such a great singer?
I'd say yes and no, but I think that's ultimately, that never drove me, you know? And like, I still didn't, my little brother would say, oh my gosh, you see, that guy just totally checked you out. And it's funny because he's my gay brother and he's so keen to all these things and is always, you know, looking at all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't even notice. I've never really cared. It was always just the love of music that drove me. And, you know, I guess by default, it probably happened, you know, just by doing music. Of course, people come to shows and it's like, oh, and she sings, you know, but that was never like what drove me. It still isn't.
Yeah, I think that's the difference between men and women, which is interesting that you've confirmed it. So
it's
how
true.
Women
do it for the love. There's really not the ego attachment, no offense to guys, but a lot of times with guys, sometimes there's a little bit more of the ego involved.
Right. How did you get to Nashville from there?
I went to 1 year of college and I told my parents, I'm wasting your money and my time. And I want to go to Nashville. I took a trip there with a friend. I saw girls playing guitars and writing songs. And I knew that's where I want to be. That's what I want to do. I have to do country music. So I drove here with a friend when I, after my first year of college, and been here ever since. I've taken little sabbaticals, you know, like during the pandemic, went back to California, but this has always, you know, been my constant home since then.
Annie, what's the time frame around when you got to Nashville? Because I've got a question I want to ask, but I'm curious about the time frame when you got there.
Nashville was still like this quaint little whimsical town, and people were sort of questioning, you're going, why would you go there? And now it's like, this is the place to be. You know, country is so cool. It's so on fire. Everybody's doing it. And that was not the case when I moved here.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that I asked was, and I mentioned, you know, in the intro that you love that 90s sound, as do I. And I love the fact that you kind of keep it alive in a lot of your music, which is fantastic. And I'm going to come back to that in a little bit. But I also think that, you know, we've had quite a few guests on who were putting out hit after hit in the 90s into the early 2000s. And then there was kind of a little bit of a change, kind of the bro country movement and all that stuff. And that's why I was kind of wondering, like, you know, did any of that impact you creatively, you know, when you were there and country was kind of going through some of those changes?
Yeah, you know, I never am one to, I don't like complainers. I don't like complaining. But I think it was probably why I didn't get offered a record deal during that time. Because when I moved here, it sort of, there was this 10-year stretch of just bro country. It was bro, bro, bro. And it was anywhere I went, they would say, we're not signing females, not signing females, don't want to sign females, we're not signing females. I mean, I had like, you know, members of like the biggest bands in country music at that time walking me into their label, nope, no females. And it was so frustrating because you're like, gosh, like this is insane. I grew up, you know, during an era where females ruled the world. It was like Shania, Faith, Trisha Yearwood, Jody Messina, Sarah Evans. It was amazing. You know, Martina McBride, just this amazing stretch of killer female artists who recorded killer songs. And so I think it, you know, I never let it stop me, but of course it was frustrating, you know, like, and really frustrating. Because I think what made me fall in love with country and move to this town was no longer the end thing, from like the, you know, the songwriting styles to just my gender, which obviously couldn't help at the time. And now I do think the pendulum is kind of swinging back. And I think that, you know, for every revolution, there's a counter revolution. I think we're hearing a lot of neo-traditional country artists coming out now. And I would kind of classify my music in that department. It's like, it's new and it's avant-garde, but it's still traditional. And it has that element of throwback and the nod to the music that really influenced me to move here in the first place. And it was like, well, why wouldn't I, you know, make that kind of music? But that's why I came here to begin with. And so whether or not it works, okay, I can't control that. But I feel in my heart, it's important to showcase fiddle, showcase steel, sing about country topics, and to not shy away from that. You know what I mean? And just because this is in right now, it's like, well, you know, that's going to change in 2 years anyways, right?
No, absolutely. And I think that, you know, for what it's worth, you know, that sound, like I said, I clearly hear it in the songs on your EP, and, you know, going back to Crooked Halo could hear it, you know, in there too.
Spits fire like a Roman candle, a down on heart that's prone to ramble. Says it might be hard to handle, but I know who I am.
Your videos, Annie, I see like they're almost like a Shania Twain type of influence. There's a confidence that you have. There's something that you have that comes through only, and don't tell Shania I said this, but I just think you sound better. But like, I love your voice, but was she an influence for you? You mentioned her earlier, because there's something there that just kind of reminds me of some of her classic videos back in the day.
That's so cool to hear you say that. I mean, no one has studied her videos like me, and trust me, no one has studied her like me. And of course, as an artist, you know, you go through phases, right? Like I went through my Celine Dion phase, and then I went through my, as a kid, the first singer I heard was Patsy Cline. So really like fell in love with her. And that was my first initial intro to country music, and just her voice. It just like, you know, just pulled on my heartstrings, and it was like so powerful. And really that was because of my dad. Like he loves classic country and really raised me on that. And then I'll never forget, my aunt pulled in the driveway one day and she handed me the Come On Over album. And, you know, I'm a young teen, and it just felt like she was saying everything that I was feeling. You know, it was like, it just felt like I was listening to my best friend. And then in watching her, it was like, okay, not only do I want to be her best friend, but I want to be her. And I probably had like my first girl crush ever looking at her. I mean, so beautiful, so sexy, but like in a girl next door kind of way, you know? It was always like tasteful, but kind of pushing the envelope and flirty and fun. And I just loved that she was also like a real cowgirl, like, you know, really knew how to ride horses and was a down home girl in a ball cap, but could still get glammed up and be so beautiful. And I just have so much respect for her as an artist, a songwriter, and just think she's brilliant. And I'll never forget, my dad took me to her concert. I was probably in like sixth grade, and I stood on top of my seat the entire show. Like I stood and just yelled. And it was like that moment of like, that is what I have to do. That, like her, whatever she's doing, like, that's it, you know?
Well, how does it feel to be doing that?
Oh, so sweet. Well, hey, I have a long way to go. I mean, when you look at what she did on a worldwide scale, unbelievable, unmatched, you know, in country music. But she's someone I would just love to hug her and meet her, you know, one day. And I just said, yeah, I'm such a big fan. And also just loved aesthetically, like her videos, how creative she was, and such cool concepts and outfits, and she had fun with it. And I think the entertainment, it should be fun. You know, sometimes we get so serious about it, but I'm like, you guys, we're not operating on hearts here. Yeah, we are. We're operating on hearts, but like through a song and through music. And this should be an escape for people in the midst of the mundane or the difficult things that they're going through. Like, really, entertainment should be an escape for people.
You know, you make a great point, because it's obvious that Shania was a role model for you and someone you aspire to be as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
How seriously do you take that role as an artist yourself?
Well, I mean, we just had that conversation earlier about, you know, profanities, and look, I'm not some perfect, I love Jesus, but I cuss a little. Okay. I do. But, you know, when it comes to like doing it on a public front or on stage, no, I don't feel comfortable doing it. I just think when I see, you know, like little girls in the audience, and I feel an obligation to set a good standard for them. And so for me personally, it's just not my thing, you know, and it's crazy. You know, recently I have had little girls coming to shows, and it's amazing. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm having like my first fan girl. They're like, ah! When you walk out, they're going ballistic. I'm like, this is the age group I should be making music for, because no one is more diehard than them. And I should know that, because I was the diehard girl. Like, the way that music hits you at that age is so different. You're so tender, and you're so vulnerable to the world and music, and it's just a whole other thing. And so, yeah, I think I feel a responsibility to try to be just a good person, you know, when no one's watching, but especially when you have young girls watching you.
For sure. Yeah,
and it's clear to me, and that's why I mentioned in the intro, you know, positive outlook, because I think that you just ooze positivity, you know, in your performance, in your videos. And that's another thing as a role model that, you know, we could use a lot more of. And I wanted to now kind of fast forward to your EP. I've been dying to get to this, because there's so many different ways I'd love to look at this. First thing is, each of the five songs, usually when I've listened to EPs in the past, there's like a throwaway or two on there, or something that was just kind of added in so it could become an EP. Mm-hmm. All five songs are phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And then I look and I see that Honky Tonk Highway, you co-wrote with Bridget Tatum. And then Neon Baby, Bridget, and Jeffrey Steele.
Yeah.
But how did that collaboration come about? And does it get any better than that?
No. And I have to be honest. I mean, it took me 17 years to like even get in the room to write with him. And now it's like he's become a close friend and a mentor, and no one has been more encouraging. Like, with it being the single and going on radio tour, it's like he is so excited, and it's so unpretentious and so humble and sweet and kind. And so that's been a real learning lesson and just inspiration. It's like, man, you can be the best at what you do, and you can still be the nicest person in the room. And he is. And Bridget, my gosh, is just, you know, she's just brilliant. And I think her, you know, her biggest writing success is like yet to come. I just think she's so witty. She's such an amazing way with words and just great instincts, you know, when it comes to knowing what people and like the country music fan wants to hear. And she's become a really good friend. So I think there's so much gratification in working with your friends. You know, it's like with her Honky Tonk Highway, we were just sitting out on like the back porch, just like talking about our love for Patti Loveless and laughing and having fun. And it was so fun writing that song. We wrote it in like less than an hour, and we laughed the entire way through. It was like, let's just paint this story of a woman. We were intentionally Patti Loveless about it. Like, let's do something that feels Patti Loveless 2024, like rockin', but like country honky tonker, you know? And so, it's a really amazing thing to get to collaborate with your heroes. But I think, for me, you know, it didn't happen quickly. It's like, this has taken almost 2 decades to work with a lot of these people, you know? So I think it's taken time to get there.
When you write, Annie, in a situation like that, are you writing lyrics first, or does the music come first, or is it depend?
It's different every kind of way. Bridget had the title for Neon Baby, and initially we were going to make it, I'm going to be your neon baby. You know, like that was sort of the idea. And she hung up the phone, and I thought about it. And I thought, you know, it even might be cooler if a chick were to say, I'll be your neon baby. I can be the party. We don't have to be at the bar. Like, I can be the party, right? And so she calls back and says, oh, no. I think it should be, I'll be your neon baby. And I said, that's exactly what I was thinking. We got in with Jeff. Jeff did that cool little riff. He kind of came up with that groove. It was like, throwing out Colin Ray references and Crystal Gayle references and something that felt a little Western, but soul. And so, yeah, that song really kind of wrote itself pretty easily and was really, really fun to write. But I'd say it's different. Sometimes I'll hear a melody in my head. Sometimes someone will say something. I'll talk to someone in a conversation, or I'll watch something and I'll hear something. So it happens in all different kinds of ways. You know, it's different every time.
I do have to ask one thing. I want to come back to, you talked about a couple of decades it took to get to that point where you were writing with them. And you, I said in the intro, you know, you've been honing your craft for years. You've been working hard, doing all those things. I just want to, first of all, commend you for sticking with it. Where did you draw the inspiration from to not give up on your dream and to keep going and keep going through all of that?
That's a really great question. And at times I'm like, man, you have to be crazy. Like, you literally have to be borderline crazy to do what we do. And it really comes down to, like, you got to love it. Because if you don't love it, I mean, you will get kicked to the curb so many different ways. And it is so frustrating that if you don't really love it, I just don't think you'll hang around. It's, you know, eventually you'll leave. And I think for me, I have a really supportive family. So that's number one. I have a really strong relationship with God. So that's always been a huge centerpiece for me and a rock for me. And, you know, there were times where I didn't give up, but like I moved home. I had a surgery on my vocal cord. I had a band that I put together that had fallen through because of my vocal cord injury, and I was silent. And then I finally got better and I built myself up and I'm singing better than ever because I'm training my voice, and bam, the pandemic hits, you know? And so it's just like, oh, again, I just went through a year, you know, of like my own silent sabbatical. And so I stayed in California and I basically just listened to the music that I loved, that inspired me to do country music in the first place. Spent time outdoors, riding horses, hiking, surfing. I was just like, I've been busting my butt for so many years in Nashville. This is my time to be near my family and just be outside. And I'm a nature person. I love the outdoors. So it really was a moment to sort of stop and also say no to all the things that were kind of pulling me in so many different directions for years. Cause for years I was a working singer. So I was always writing on other people's projects or singing for other people or doing things to make a living. So it was really a time to say no to that stuff and focus on what I wanted to do, which was, okay, you need to make an album. Like, you have never made an album. You are constantly busy doing this and making music, but you've never made an album. Like, this is crazy. You've been doing this for so long. I'm making an album. I told myself that, and I will go back to Nashville when I get a gig. And I got a gig, and at the gig, I bumped into Vince Gill, and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm making an album," because in my head now I was doing this. And he wrote down his name and number on a piece of paper, and he said, "Well, I want to sing and play on it." And then I went, okay, shoot, now I really got to make the album. Like, this, I actually have to do this now, because like, he wants to work on this, and now you told him you're doing this, which I was writing for it, you know, but I wasn't in the studio making it. And so I think for me, and I told him this just recently, that was sort of the God wink, the moment that I needed to be like, okay, it's go time, you know, because there were times where I never gave up, but I just felt defeated. And it's like, I had to take a break, you know, or just step aside or step back for a minute and go, what are you doing wrong? Because the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over, expecting different results, right? So I knew for me, I had to do something differently. And from there, it led to a collaboration with Dwight Yoakam, who's a musical hero of mine. And he had come to show that I played. I developed a friendship with him and his wife. And then I thought, you know what, who else could I get to do a song with me? What about Raul Mallow? He was at a showcase that I was playing with Lainey Wilson. So we become friends. I did a song with him. We put it out. My manager heard it, signed with him. And within 3 months, I signed a record deal. So I think at the end of the day, you just have to keep going and like, and stick to your love of it. And for me, moving home, listening to the music that really inspired me to move to Nashville in the first place was really important to do. And to also not hate the town, you know, because sometimes like, it can drive you to hate it. It can. And you talk to anyone. I mean, it's frustrating. It's like, you can hate this business. You always love music, but you can, the business has a way of making you hate it. And I think for me, I had to get that love back because I didn't want like the bitterness or the resentment of four deals in a year falling through, you know, or feeling betrayed and feeling like nothing was working, you know. But again, I don't like complaining. I don't like complainers. So it was like, I need to go get good with me and make the music that I love. And I think once I started doing that, it just started attracting, and here I am.
Well, sometimes you have to go home and refuel. And I wanted to comment on, you know, you were talking about kind of, you knew Vince Gill and you worked in the studio for a long time. I was wondering, was the time when you were a working singer and writing for other people, was that during the bro period?
Yeah, because as a female, you couldn't get arrested. That's a joke because everyone's getting arrested now. But I swear to God, even like with everyone getting arrested, I couldn't even get arrested. Wow. I feel like I could have done anything and no one would have arrested me. It was just crazy.
That is crazy. But you've worked with some very high profile people, singing backgrounds for Adele and Darius Rucker, and someone I'm going to see in concert tomorrow night, Andrea Bocelli.
Oh, cool. That's so cool.
But I want to ask you, because listen, Annie, you're a colossal talent in your own right. I don't care if, you know, you're still working toward whatever your goal of, you know, of the industry is, but do you ever still get starstruck around, because you did a duet, a beautiful duet with Andrea Bocelli.
Thank you.
And I was just wondering, how, what was that experience like for you? Were you intimidated at all? Or was it just like, oh my God, pinch me, this is incredible.
For starters, I had laryngitis, and I was like 3 days in or 48 hours in, and it was like nothing was coming out. Like I had lost my voice probably twice ever. This was the second time ever. I'm so nervous, and I thought, oh my God, I'm gonna give him laryngitis. But I'd been on antibiotics for like 3 or 4 days at this point, so I'm like, okay, I'm no longer contagious. You got to do it. You might not get this opportunity again. So
how did as you long get as you're the not... opportunity?
Sorry?
How did you get the opportunity?
I got the opportunity because of David Foster.
Okay.
He used to have me come perform at his shows and his concerts and do I Will Always Love You and The Prayer. And he, you know, now mainly just uses his wife for shows. Catherine does everything, a lot of the stuff. But he was great. For years, he hired me to sing in concerts and do demo work for him in the studio, and talk about a colossal talent, you know, learned so much from him, and like, oh my gosh, his perfectionism and how he hears things, and like everything has to be like at this level, which I love. And so because of David, I got to sing with Andrea Bocelli, and it was just, I mean, one of those moments. It's like, did that really happen? I will forever cherish that moment. And I mean, just when he walked in the room, it's like you feel like the calibration of his spirit, his body just in the room, you know. And then he opens his mouth and you're just like, I mean, and his voice is really that beautiful in person. Just
well, so was yours. Honestly, we watched it. Bill and I watched it. I sent it to a couple people because I'm like, you gotta hear this. I mean, I wouldn't have known at that point that you were a country singer.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think I'm pretty diverse, you know, in how I can, and you can manipulate your voice. It's like, I think even the biggest country singers, it's like, I'll hear them sing a Journey song or like a Beatles song, and you'll be like, well, I didn't hear any twang. And then all of a sudden they'll sing their song and you're like, oh, there's the twang. So I think the twang is something that you kind of, as a singer, a lot of us I'd say not at all, not all, but a lot of singers. I think when you're a vocalist, you hear things audibly. So I'm able to like manipulate my voice pretty easily, whether it's talking in a British accent or it's, you know, like, I think, you know, we do that as singers because of your ear. So I think that I'm able to kind of manipulate my voice.
Yeah. Well, and you manipulate it incredibly well. I had one last question for you, Annie. You know, you've obviously, you've been through a lot, and to me, there's still so much left to go and so many things yet for you to accomplish. What would success ultimately look like for you?
Success would be my own headlining arena tour. Success would be doing what I'm doing now, but just on a larger scale. And being able to impact people with music and, you know, having success so I can help people with it, really, would be like my ultimate dream. I mean, to get to do nice things and go nice places, of course, but I just think the impact, you know, you can make. My mom always says, like, if you had money, you'd be broke because you'd be giving it away, helping people. And it's probably true. But I, you know, I think that there's so much you can do when you have, no, even not beyond, you know, financial success, just a name, right? It's like there, with that comes power and being able to do things and help people. So I'd love that. I'd love to have a kid one day. You know, that's something that would be success for me personally. And yeah, and I'd say doing exactly what I'm doing now, just on a larger, bigger scale.
Well,
and headlining.
It's coming. It's coming.
Yeah. You certainly have the talent for it, and you have the staying power and the drive and the passion.
Thank you. Well, staying power is a good word. I've been using that a lot lately because it's like, you know what? People get so bent out of shape over things and this and that. Well, it's like, at the end of the day, all you can do is focus on you. And for me, I've always really admired singers that are able to have long careers. And I think the ultimate success would be longevity and getting to do, you know, a tribute album, a Bakersfield album one day, a jazz, a standards album, a spiritual album, you know, like it'd be so cool to have longevity and to get to partake in different bodies of work and get to evolve as an artist. And to me, that's like, you know, staying power would be the ultimate success.
Absolutely. Well, we look forward to seeing what the future holds for you, Annie, and for hearing your beautiful music and your beautiful voice. And we thank you so much for coming on the show with us. And folks, we hope you've enjoyed the show, and we look forward to seeing you again.
5:30, the alarm clock rings too early. Didn't get much sleep. If I didn't need this job, I swear I'd quit. Rolled over, turned some music on, been forever since I heard